Welcome to episode 231 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat big data and ticketing and revenue strategies with Stella Elgo's Vincent Urkandia.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host who thinks most pro teams will have a Twitch channel by year's end, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. Yes, my name is Sean Callanan, and I do think teams will start migrating and looking at Twitch as a platform and as somewhere that they should be pushing their content. What are your thoughts? Is Twitch on your radar? Do you understand the platform? Are you looking at the platform? Do you know what it is? Hopefully you listened to my episode last week with my GM of esports here at SG Esports, Brandon DeFina, and learned a little bit about Twitch. It's definitely worth investigating. Happy to discuss it, whether it's part of an esports strategy or just part of your sports strategy, because that's what I am now offering as part of the Sports Geek offering. As always, you can reach out to me via email the old-fashioned way, sean@sportsgeekhq.com. or at Sean Callanan on most platforms, Twitter, or LinkedIn, or Instagram, or Twitch, or Discord, if you are now in the gaming space. Before I get into my conversation with Vincent from Stella Elgo, I just want to talk about some sessions I've been having around these new Pick My Brain sessions, which are a two-hour consult via GoToMeeting to deep dive into any single topic you want to look into, whether it's diving into your analytics around what your Facebook page is doing, what your Twitter account's doing, looking at your ads and your ad campaigns you might be running. We talk a little bit about ad campaigns and analyzing your data with Vince and that kind of thing. So that kind of stuff is what people have been using the Pick My Brain session for. Or also, if you just want to look at your big broad strategies, you want to pull out and get that 30,000 foot view and sort of step back, because some of the things that we find is you're so far, and even we found that now working on the Gravitas stuff, you're so far in the day-to-day, the week-to-week, that it does help to sort of step back and look at everything with a bit of an objective view and a sounding board. So, yeah, if you want one of those sessions, you can just go to my Calendly account or go to sportsgeekhq/pickmybrain. They're $250 for a two-hour consulting session. If you're interested or want more info, you can send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq. Now, here is my chat with Vincent Urkandia from Stella Elgo, who talks about his career in data and how he got into sports and how he founded Stella Elgo and what they do. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Vincent Urkandia. Very happy to welcome founder and CEO of Stella Elgo, Vincent Urkandia. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Sean. How are you doing? Thanks for having me.
First of all, where in the world are we talking to you from?
I am in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, up in Western Canada. So that's where we're based out of.
Okay. And we recently met in real life after knowing each other and have a bit of backwards and forwards online, and also part of Sports Geek Nation. So really good to catch up with you at National Sports Forum in Las Vegas. Did you enjoy the experience at National Sports Forum?
I did, yeah. We had a great time. I feel like with all the conferences happening in Vegas these days that I'm spending more time there than I ever thought I would. But no, it was great and really a collaborative event. I think that's what really differentiates National Sports Forum. So I think it's a great networking opportunity for anybody, and it was valuable for us.
So before we get into Stella Elgo and what you're doing there, can you take us back to your break and how you got into the world of sports?
Yeah, absolutely. It's been what seems like a crazy journey. It's been just over 10 years now, but I actually started my my career in the energy industry and was doing working with data for a few different financial firms focused on the energy business for about 5 years. Wasn't my passion, so moved down to California actually to pursue an MBA down there, and it was around the time that ownership groups started to invest more in data and better understanding their customers. And so as I came out of business school, I was hired by the Los Angeles Kings to help build out their dynamic pricing practice. And Chris McGowan was the CEO at the time of the LA Kings. And so I was really saddled with helping to build out that dynamic pricing practice, that role up.
So yeah, that was very much when the I guess the money ball off the ice or off the pitch or off the diamond was starting to happen, where teams were starting to dive a little bit deeper into the data and analyze what the opportunities were. Dynamic pricing started to kick in. It was very much that was that early wave, 2010, 11, 12 was that early wave of that movement, wasn't it?
It was, exactly. Yeah, and I think ownership groups started to get a little bit more sophisticated. Fans had higher expectations in terms of using technology around venues. And so, yeah, the Moneyball movement really on the player performance side popularized the usage of data in sports. But on the fan side, which is where I focused my whole career, the ownership group started to really push the management teams at these at sports franchises to get more sophisticated in terms of how they were understanding their customers. And it wasn't just if we won or lost that resulted in good attendance and revenues. And so, you know, I really started my career as a part of that movement into better understanding fans and fan data.
And so was it a combination of the in the ticketing, maximizing yield and that kind of thing from a ticketing point of view, and then also also a little bit of the understanding the fan from a commercial sponsorship partnership point of view? What was there a particular focus early on?
Yeah, early on it was, and I think that this is typical of, you know, many who have started to use data in sports. The focus was on the ticketing side in the early going, but as things matured, we moved into other important areas of our business. Yeah, like the corporate partnership side of things. And the cool thing about the Kings is they're owned by AEG, who's a global company, has been the largest facilities owner operator for venues in the world. So I got promoted into a director of business intelligence role for all of AEG Sports, and in that capacity got to work on a couple different continents, making sure that our sales and marketing technologies were integrated and that we were using the data in those systems to build our fan relationships.
And did you start seeing, because at AEG you've sort of got multiple properties, whether they be teams and or venues, did you start seeing the similarities between the different fan bases and how fans were moving around, I guess at least in a digital world?
Yeah. There was a lot of commonalities, I think, in terms of how fans behaved and interacted with the teams. Every market and property definitely was also very unique. So it was, frankly, one of the biggest challenges was to try and apply that broader learning to the localized markets. Yep. And the fact that every fan base, fans act similarly, but they're definitely unique. So I think that that's actually a challenge for anybody in the data business, is being able to do that localization while leveraging a larger data set.
Okay. And so from the Kings and AEG, then you moved to Portland?
Yeah, I did. And so Chris McGowan in 2013, AEG put itself up for sale, and actually never ended up selling. But my mentor and boss at the time, Chris McGowan, took the job as CEO and president and CEO of the Trailblazers and the Rose Quarter up in Portland. And myself and actually Dwayne Hankins, whom I know that you know as well,
yep.
We were a couple of the early hires into a new management team up in Portland. And so I spent over 4 years as SVP of business operations for the Trailblazers. I was in charge of our technology group. I was in charge of all of our customer data strategy and BI efforts, as well as ticket operations and revenue strategy. So that was a really exciting for me to join the NBA fraternity and learn from a league and peers in that league, whom I really have thought of as being very innovative in terms of how the league operates. So it was a great experience.
And what was it like moving from like those two different markets, like LA and Portland, vastly different markets, and the you know, where the, you know, talking about how fans are different, like just the position in the market and the size of the market, and also I guess the history in the town. What were some of the differences from looking from, you know, at working at the Kings in LA and competing against some of the really big LA franchises to moving to the Trailblazers?
Yeah, I'll try not to make too many of my answers just completely data nerd for you, Sean.
But the data nerd bit is interesting to me because I'm here making, like, you need the data nerd because I'm here making the assumptions, and like, you know, that's why, you know, you want to validate it with data, as I would say, in this part of the world. But yeah, happy to go full data nerd here, and I'm sure the listeners are nodding in appreciation.
Okay. Yeah. And there's two parts. I think the important part of being that data nerd is also, you know, the practical knowledge and information that can become actionable out of that data. So what was really amazing about going to Portland, frankly, was you're in Los Angeles, you know, really hyper competitive market. And so working for the Kings in particular in Los Angeles, they did have a really focused fan base and very loyal fans around the Kings, but in that market, there's just so much noise. You know, there's fans coming from, you know, all over the place, traveling great distances for games, you know, heavy tourist market as well. A lot of competition for share of people's attention. And you fast forward to Portland where, you know, the Timbers have done an unbelievable job in the MLS there, but, you know, for a long time and still in a way, Portland, the Trailblazers are just, you know, such a big presence and historically in that market. So what we really saw with the Trailblazers that was amazing was that engagement, frankly, of the fan base. So from a data perspective for us, going into Portland, where we operated the venue ourselves, the Trailblazers were so popular. We had this hyper-engaged fan base where we're able to leverage so many data points on fans and use that engagement to frankly better nurture customers. So it was pretty eye-opening just to see, you know, how passionate that city is, kind of win or lose around the Trailblazers.
And it is a challenge when you've got a fan base that's so passionate and connected, is that you can, I guess, rest back in your seat and be a little bit lazy because the fans, you know, show so much passion, but you've got to be building for the next generation of fans and those kind of things. Was that one of the challenges? Is the wrong word, but one of the principles that you needed to always be looking at from a Trailblazers point of view?
Yeah, it absolutely is. And in my prior answer, you know, I want to make sure to make the point, like, the Kings fan base in LA is equally incredible. It's just that is a massive market.
It's a market and the competition and those kind of things. I completely understand. Yeah.
Yeah, so you're definitely, you know, having you know, to compete in a little bit of a different way, but I, you know, in Portland, definitely, I think one of the great things with the group that we have, and you know, they've carried it on since I've now left, but they are hyper focused on understanding those fans, you know, despite the fact that it isn't one of the largest markets in the U.S. They have to work extra hard to understand that fan base because, you know, a lot of the times they're for commercial partnerships and getting those corporate partners in the door, you know, they are competing with some of these larger market teams.
Yep.
And so if they can get an edge by better understanding the customers that are coming to their venue and interacting with their brand, you know, that can really give a leg up in terms of over-indexing revenue, fan engagement, and affinity-wise with some of those corporate partners as well.
So that gives a bit of a background. And then, so 2016, take us through leaving the Trailblazers and starting Stella Algo. Like, what was the thinking behind it? What were those first, like I like to call them, the baby giraffe walking days as you're starting to get started with a startup? What were those early days like, and sort of why did you form and sort of set out on your own?
Yeah, I like making things hard on myself. Every decision I've made career transition wise has been, you know, I have loved the organization and loved my role within the organization. And so when I left the Kings, that was a really tough decision. But I grew a lot as a result of it. And, you know, when I decided to leave the Trailblazers in 2016, there's a couple of reasons. You know, one of them was I'm Canadian and my family is all located in Western Canada, and so you know, wanted to be closer to family. The second part of it was really just that I saw an opportunity, frankly, and my feeling in going to these conferences and meeting with my peers is that, and I saw, you know, myself, we really were still running way too many manual processes in terms of understanding those fans, and I really believe that in order to meet the needs of our business in the future, walking down the hall and asking an analyst to run some sort of analysis, you know, whether it's using, you know, some sort of a database language, or whether it's them going into their, you know, social platform and trying to run some analytics, those sorts of exercises were still very manual. Sometimes it would take a day or two to, you know, pull a really targeted customer list. And then once you activated on that list, you might have to walk down the hall again a week later and say, hey, how did that campaign that we ran do? Well, give me a couple of days to run that analysis. And the technology that is available these days and capabilities that you can build out really can automate a lot of that feedback loop and result in you know, more timely and personalized messaging to customers. And so I just felt that teams had this great data asset that they're sitting on top of, and using modern technology, there was a better way to start to monetize it to the benefit of the fans and the organization. And so that's what I set out to build in 2016.
And so what was the initial, initial build? Was there an MVP built out, or was there a wireframe that says this is how it's going to work? What was the initial version?
Yeah. And for me, this is my first time being an entrepreneur. I always thought of myself as an intrapreneur at some of these organizations, because I like to think of myself as trying to disrupt the status quo and the way that things have always been done. Apologies for that. The way that things have always been done. But this is my first time as an entrepreneur, so it's been a tremendous growth experience. The Trailblazers gave me and Stellar Algo, the new company, a one-year consulting agreement to continue to mine their customer data. And so I didn't pay myself for the first few months. I used that money capitalize the company, identify some really great talent, and there's a lot of really great STEM talent up here in Canada, and then start to productize some of that data mining that I was doing. And so, you know, our early MVP really launched in kind of middle of 2017, and we brought a few early customers onto that. The Trailblazers were one. But also the U.S. Open tennis tournament came on quite early. The Vancouver Canucks came on quite early, you know, all of whom are still customers. But yeah, in those early days, it was about automating some of these manual data analysis exercises that the teams were doing. And, you know, over the course of the last few years, we've really built that out into, you know, what we call a customer data platform. Which is really driven off of making it really easy to segment, understand, and target your audience at a much more robust level than has been possible in the past for franchises.
So, from a team point of view, who's the person that's getting the most benefit of plugging into your system and getting those insights in an automated fashion? Is it the data analytics person? Is it the ticketing person? Where do you fit inside a sports organization?
Yeah, it does actually vary quite a bit. Yep. And you know, I know you and I have talked, and you've been on our website. We work with properties of all different sizes. So you know, major global properties like U.S. Open Tennis, but then we also have a bunch of minor league baseball teams and minor league sports teams that we work with as well. So it depends a little bit on the organization. You know, we definitely with some of the sophisticated technology that we're able to deliver in the big league sports, typically we're working with the digital and analytics leaders. Yep. from those teams. And so that's really our first point of contact there. And there's amazing analytics folks now that work at a lot of the teams in North America. You know, a lot of times they're not 10, 20 person teams, and there is a lot of manual work happening. So we can really help them to accelerate their capabilities by automating a lot of the manual work and making it easier for them to predict and segment their audiences. With the minor league teams, and something that we really pride ourselves on is really making that data easy to democratize across an organization. And you've got ticket sales and marketing leaders that frankly want great access to their customer data in an actionable way. And in the past, it's just been really difficult to get at that. So a lot of the times we also have, ticketing personnel and marketing personnel that are now able to really use our platform, without having to write some sort of robust database code. They can actually use our tools and technologies to reach right into a database, pull segments, track performance and predictability of those segments over time.
Okay, and then from an operational point of view, it's then up to the team to plug that data and those segments into whatever, I guess, marketing channel or email marketing or advertising components that they've got from their marketing department.
Absolutely, yeah, and integrations is such an important piece of what we do, frankly, and we see it as still a big pain point for the industry. Whether you're operating your own data warehouse and you've built this really robust data warehouse internally, or whether you're still accessing data in different source systems, we really pride ourselves on connecting that data into the source system so you can make it more actionable. And so now we have, like today, we have 130 live integrations, for example, that are running right now. If you want to run a campaign across multiple channels, you're able to reach into your database through our tools very easily and activate them through those different channels. And so we make it a lot easier for you to sort of tear those walls down that have historically made it real difficult for marketing and sales organizations to activate their database.
So what's the first thing that you guys do at Stell Algo when a new customer comes on board and says, we've got all this data, we've heard the stories about big data, we don't know exactly what it all means, we're not quite sure how to get started. You know, we hear people talking about being on their data journey and those kind of things. Where do you and your team start?
Yeah. So for us, we right out of the gate, we have a customer success team. And so the customer success team is really focused on those data outcomes. And our personal belief here, and one of my pain points historically, is organizations have really focused their data efforts from a data strategy perspective on, hey, we need to get our data organized is sort of their first step in this, without really understanding what outcomes they want to achieve downstream.
Yep.
And so what we do out of the gate is our customer success team, as we start to implement and integrate with their systems, we're asking a lot of questions about, hey, what do you think is the biggest, where can we get the biggest return on investment by helping you to better understand your fans and then activate those fan segments? And so through that dialogue, and we have a pretty great process for doing this, we really help organizations to start to crystallize what are those downstream outputs that are going to be most valuable for them, because every team is different. Some teams are sold out for tickets, and so they're not worried about selling incremental tickets, but they might be worried about activating a certain segment of their database on behalf of a certain sponsor. That could be, a priority for them. Or maybe they've had a long tenured season ticket holder base that, they're worried might be in decline. They want to retain more of those people. So the ability to really easily segment your database and predict behaviors, is really what we're about. And there's multiple application, but I would say for an organization that's just starting, I would say I agree that data is really important. But why is it important to you? And if you could wave your magic wand, what are a few capabilities that you would like your organization to have that would help you guys to be better on your income statement, but also, for just your fans overall?
Yeah, because, I mean, that's the thing. It is different cases for every different client. Looking at, to sort of dive into a case study a little bit to understand, I guess, some of the pieces or some of the strategies you did to get that result. Can you tell us a little bit about your work you've done with the LA Galaxy and sort of what they were looking for and some of the levers that you were able to pull to get to that outcome?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and we're working with a number of soccer teams now in North America, in the MLS, and then in the USL as well. The Galaxy has been a really great case study. They had LAFC, and I know you had somebody recently on the podcast from LAFC.
Yeah, had Colin Kelly, and they have a new kid on the block. So the Galaxy would have been looking at the market, saying, "We've got to shore up what we're doing."
Yeah, absolutely, and that organization with LAFC coming into market, it's such a storied MLS franchise, but they wanted to continue to grow their fan base, with another team in market, and for them it was all about better understanding their fans. That was really important for them, and they wanted to be able to better activate their fan base and grow that fan base. Even with LAFC there. So what we've done with them, there's a few different areas, but one of the big areas that they're using our customer data platform quite heavily is to better engage those individual game buyers that are coming, coming to their venue. I don't know if you know this, but on average, we see this across all the sports in North America, but the individual game buyer churn rate in professional sports in North America hovers around 80 to 85%, depending on the league, across leagues. So it's a really high churn rate, and organizations are spending so much money on digital marketing and a lot of times trying to capture new fans, which nothing against that, but when you have exposed a fan to your product, bringing them back we think is one of the most under-celebrated and talked about opportunities that exist for these teams. And so, you know, the Galaxy, you know, that stat was an eye-opener for them. They wanted to better nurture those individual game or match buyers coming to their stadium. With our segmentation, you're able to pretty quickly do things like, you know, not offer every fan in the every individual game buyer the same, you know, ticketing messaging, and a little bit of personalization, you know, goes a long way. So, you know, there might be a fan that's, if they get a message saying tickets start at this price, will be completely turned off because they're into a VIP experience. Or maybe they're from a geography where, you know, they're never going to buy a last minute ticket for a game, but, you know, with a couple weeks notice, they may. So in a world where people are getting more sales and marketing messaging than at any point in history, it's just becoming more important to be able to personalize that marketing messaging. And we are making that scalable for the first time, frankly, in professional sports. We think that with our technology, you're able to personalize messaging to fans and make that scalable. And they've had significant lift in revenues. Obviously, having Ibrahimovic join the team doesn't hurt as well. And we were able to leverage that positive on-field momentum as well in partnership with their smart staff using our machine learning capabilities. And it's been it was an amazing year for them revenue-wise. So,
yeah, and I guess, you know, having spoken previously to Aaron Lavallee around the amount of work that the Galaxy had done in the group ticket sales, like that's a perfect example. Like you do a great job in selling group tickets, but you want to be able to bring those groups back in smaller groups or in smaller friend groups and bringing them back, because otherwise the effort expended to get that group sale is great. But like you said, if you can dive into your data and make multiple sales, that moves them along that customer fan funnel, if you will.
Yeah. No, yeah, absolutely. And I personally think group tickets is still, it's such an important area, but from an analytics perspective, it ends up being one of the least served areas, frankly. And I still see a lot of leaders of group departments that are working in Excel, trying to do their own customer segmentation, you know, really set up their own campaigns. And it is such an important area where you know, using data, you know, the Galaxy have done a really great job to, you know, to automate their understanding of who their groups are, and, you know, which groups might be you know, most relevant for certain matches.
So I think I did actually ask this question in the Sports Geek Nation AMA selfishly, like from a team gravitas point of view, where, you know, we've been starting from fan zero and we're sort of collecting data in multiple ways. Is there any particular data as a data nerd that you see as important data to collect, and where's the best place to acquire data that you're seeing as a bit of a trend?
Yeah, and congratulations, I guess, first and foremost on that. Really, really exciting. It's been amazing just to see, for me, what's happened in esports. We're not actively engaged by just disclosure on any esports platforms or teams. I've seen a lot of NBA. NBA organizations and pro sports organizations, for example, start to get into esports, you know, owners buying esports franchises. Yep. And I think what's amazing, and again, thinking back to the revenues, which is where my mind always goes, but, you know, the sponsorship revenue potential that exists in esports is just incredibly exciting and compelling, I think, for me, from a data perspective. I think I read something recently that I think of kind of sports viewers, I think 62% are millennials, and really understanding that young audience better and having a voice with that young audience, I think is really, really powerful, from a revenue perspective and from kind of a future potential of esports perspective. And obviously, so my view is, I think with esports and everything that happens in the digital sphere, I think being able to de-anonymize that online audience and really grow out your understanding of that online audience in the name of over time really building out your database and known fan universe, I think is you've just got, with all the online platforms that esports is able to leverage, that data set is very powerful and something that it's, I think, mainstream sports now and I think definitely also are trying to better de-anonymize that online audience through a number of different ways, but with esports, just the online presence that is just baked into the culture and esports itself, I just think that it provides tremendous potential going forward. And I think brands are going to, we actually think this is a potential for our business at Stellar Algo, but brands are going to continue to demand knowledge of who they're reaching on a one-to-one basis. It's not going to be good enough to just, have the research anymore and, have the, maybe some very lightweight customer sentiment awareness type data. So if you're able to say, hey, you're activating your brand around my audience, and I now know exactly who I'm reaching and how my audience overlaps with yours, we think that is sort of the future of brand marketing. For us, that is very important on on traditional sports, but I think esports has a little bit of an inside track there, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, I'm currently sort of building out a bit of a digital and data profile of the fan base of the OPL, and the thing is that one of the major sources of data in pro sports is the ticketing data. Like as a starting point, they're the people that have come into your stadium, and it's a good starting point. And that's the only thing, that's the thing that esports doesn't have. Like it is starting to grow out. It's events business, so it does start becoming, what does the different social platforms audiences look like? What data can we collect? What we've found in our short time is, guess what? Millennials, they do have some email addresses. They're not using them as much as other people, but they do, because when they sign up, but they definitely have mobile phones and they're definitely using these platforms. And so it's a matter of a combination of getting what you can from a data point of view, but then also trying to get some of that behavioral stuff around, hey, what are they doing on these different platforms? What platforms are they watching on? What's YouTube saying? Trying to figure out exactly what the analytics around Twitch and what that's giving or not giving in some cases. So I do think it will be a brand-driven piece, because it's only for so long you can say it's an 18 to 24 male, they love gaming and they watch esports. Like, you have to dive in a bit further, because the brands have had 10 years of pro sports and digital savviness to understand the fans, so their requirement is a lot more than maybe what you would have been pressed back in 2010, 2011, what brands were asking for in digital when it was still a new space.
Yeah, interesting. That's really interesting and exciting. I to my point earlier about just thinking on those outcomes and what you're trying to achieve, I sometimes ask teams I meet with, I say, what's your goal for your unique known, which would be a de-anonymized audience size, let's say, in the next 2-3 years? And a lot of times they don't have an answer. They might not even know what that number, what's my total marketable universe today. They might not even know what that is. But once you start to put those numbers down as a goal for the organization, now people start to work pretty hard to start to, capture that data, de-anonymize people, put those systems and processes in place. So down the road, you're going to, you have an advantage because you really know who your audience is.
So is there a, A rule of thumb is probably not the best thing to ask a data nerd, but is there a, is it, you know, because when you've got a stadium or a ballpark or an ice rink, whether it's, you know, whether you're the Trailblazers or whether you're in the USL or in the minor leagues, is there something that you say, hey, your ballpark can hold 10,000? Here's what I think from a size of a database and what your data warehouse should hold. Is it times four or times five, or like is there a number that you sort of put those targets on? How do you come up with those sort of numbers?
Yeah, so for your known audience, the number that I do have to share would be something that would be pretty typical, I think, for a sports team with a highly engaged fan base in their market. If they, you know, say the population of that market was 1 million people, yep. you would hope that and it would be different if they were a brand new franchise, but yep. What I'd say is you'd hope that they would have a database size of somewhere in kind of the 25 to 30% of that market.
Yep.
Is what you would shoot for. So that would be sort of a typical number, and I do think that can be improved upon, but that would be sort of to give you at least some sort of a benchmark on it, that would be a typical number that we see.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess that, you know, that's also part of the challenge of, you know, again, in the esports space, is that there is no geographical ties, so there's not the local market piece. So you can get you can get distracted potentially by going.
Right.
You know, anybody in the world can follow Gravitas, but then that makes your marketing efforts and data acquisition efforts tougher if you're trying to get everybody. When you need to have some focus on that piece, whether it be a particular region, demographic, and those kind of things. So that has been one of the challenges that we're looking at. In that, want it to be a global play, but there's also, hey, where's the starting point, and then where do you grow from there? So it's having that multiple focus.
Yeah, well, I think the way that esports transcends borders, that I'm sure that definitely sounds like more of an opportunity than anything to me. But doing the data capture up front, it's something that I know that the major leagues in North America are thinking about now, is, you know, making sure the data capture that they do also includes some sort of a zip code or country information, because yep. If you don't, just that one data field, and it's always a trade-off with, if we add an extra data field, you know, what happens to our conversion? You know, are people willing to, are they going to, you know, drop and not sign up if we add this field?
Yep.
I think adding a zip code or a postal code or country up front, I think, is probably very savvy for somebody like a Gravitas.
And the thing is, it's more important now more than ever to capture the data in our own systems. You know, with the difficulties that we're seeing, you know, Facebook and Google and the like having on the world stage, we can't guarantee that the data and that we may have acquired from those platforms might not be there in 12 to 18 months. We don't know with changes that are coming on board, and if they make a change in strategy, it could deeply affect how much data you can get from those platforms.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I was having a conversation about that just this morning, and I think knowing that, having that known audience understanding, I think is gonna become potentially more important if you don't have those same social access to social data and ability to activate around that data as you've had previously. So
before we jump into the Sports Geek Closing Five, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Where can people best connect with you, Vincent? What are the best channels, and where's the best person, if someone to reach out to, say, to listen to the podcast?
Yeah, for sure. So I think LinkedIn is a good place for me. So I'm on there, Vincent Urcandia, I'll give my personal email address out as well. It's V or Candy at stellaralgo.com. You can also feel free just to reach out to me by email.
Yep. And you're like myself, your name is your Twitter handle.
It is, yes.
Yes. It's the same. There's not many Vincent Acandias on the internet. You didn't have to fight too hard for that one.
I think I'm the only one. If you find another one, I think that there might be some identity theft underway.
Yeah, so there's only about one or two other Sean Callinans, but I've secured all the handles, so they're just shaking their fist in the air every time they go to a new platform.
You're the real Sean Callinan.
Yeah, so. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And otherwise they can go to stellaralgo.com, stellaralgo.com to check it out. So the Sports Get Closing Five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
Yes, I do. It's actually a minor league baseball game. I grew up in Calgary, Canada, and the team was, they're now defunct, but it was the Calgary Cannons, and they were affiliated with the Seattle Mariners at a time and Chicago White Sox as well. And so went with my dad and my brother, and we were season ticket holders for a long time after that. So that's that would be my first sports event.
I was hoping you were going to say the Calgary Rough Riders in the CFL.
Okay.
One of the best names, I reckon, in sports, the Rough Riders.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there used to be even, it was so good, they used to have two Rough Riders in the Canadian Football League, but now they've changed one of the teams, so there's only one. So
that's amazing to have two.
I know.
You would have been a few sports events in your time, and you would have seen the rise of, the concessions and the crazy concessions and different gourmet options that are available at sports events. Do you have a favorite food memory or a go-to food that when you're at a sports event?
For sure. Yeah, and it's tough for me because I love trying new things. So yep. I've been really excited about just the focus on local foods that venues have really started to take on and champion. So it's something unique to each market, and I get to go into enough venues where being able to go to the park and try food that's reflective of the city that I'm in is pretty special, just because it's more recent and near and dear to my heart. I'll say probably pizza, sizzle pie pizza in Portland. If you're ever at a Trailblazers game, I would try sizzle pie. It's great. That's my favorite.
Okay. What's the first app you open in the morning?
It's definitely email. Nothing exciting there, unfortunately, but that's where most of the important information for us on with a growing business, email is definitely where I'm communicating. So that's my first one. I also, just because that one's so boring, I really like Pocket would be the other one. I don't know if you used Pocket, but it's a great place if you're, I get articles from so many different sources that I don't always get to read them right away, so I quickly save them to Pocket and procrastinate on them until I'm ready to read them.
Yeah, I've used Pocket in the past, but I feel like the death of RSS feeds, like the fact that RSS feeds used to be a thing and blogs used to be a thing, and you could pump different RSS feeds into Pocket. That's how I was using Pocket originally, but now nothing uses RSS. Like, it's really hard to find an RSS feed for something because all of the providers are trying to either drive you there via social or put it behind a paywall. I found that it's become less useful in that sense. I have used Pocket in the past, and yeah, there is always that, can I save it for later? I think I've actually still got an if this then that rule that says when I favorite something on Twitter, it ends up in my Pocket account, but I don't think I go to my Pocket account enough. But it's a good little hack that you can do, because a lot of people use, I guess, likes on Twitter as effectively as a bookmark in that sense.
Yeah, I didn't even, wasn't aware that that was a possibility. So
yeah, I think it still is. If you go to ifthisthenthat.com, you can wire it up. So if you like something on Twitter, it will then put it in your Pocket account. I'm pretty sure that's I'm pretty sure that's a rule.
Great.
Sports. Is there someone that you follow or read or admire that you think the Sports Geek podcast listeners should follow, and why?
Because we're talking data, I'll throw a shout out to Bernard Marr. And so he's on Twitter and LinkedIn and BernardMarr.com. But he's, because we're focused on, in the kind of machine learning, artificial intelligence space with some of our data capabilities, I really see him as a thought leader from a data perspective, and bring some really amazing practical viewpoints and best practices from a number of industries, through some of the stuff that he posts. So it's a really, I think, easy way to stay on top of, what's happening across the world in this important area. So Bernard Marr, I would say, if you're interested in data, you should be following him.
How do you spell, as someone that, like myself and yourself, that have their names misspelled, how do you spell Bernard Marr?
Yeah, it's B-E-R-N-A-R-D. Yeah. So Bernard, and then his last name is M-A-R-R.
Marr, like M-A-R-R. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, you got it.
Because Marr, there's Mars with H's and O's and multiple vowels. So
M-A-R-R.
M-A-R-R. Okay.
Yeah.
Author of data strategy and big data in practice. And okay, I'm going to check. That's why I ask the question, because I always get interesting follows or interesting books to read. So I will definitely check it out. Thank you very much.
Yeah, he's good.
I always ask this of the guests, which what social media platform is your MVP? And asking that from yourself, what's your go-to social media platform? And then maybe the data nerd's take on that, which what platform is the best MVP from a data nerd's point of view?
Yeah, for sure. I'll say for me, LinkedIn, I'm a pretty heavy user on LinkedIn. I think it's a great way to build your network and stay on top of, I've built so many great relationships in this industry over the years, and it's a good way to stay in touch and on top of people and what they're up to. So love it, love LinkedIn. And then I would say Facebook, from a data perspective, I still think until something changes, as you mentioned, I still believe Facebook is just such a heavyweight in terms of the data capabilities, both in activating from an advertising perspective, but then also on just understanding interest data on what Facebook people are interested in. So
it is going to be interesting to see how that data picture evolves over the next 12 to 18 months. If they do, change what the newsfeed looks like, and also as the behavior of all the users change, like definitely in the gaming esports space, we're seeing that audience is on Facebook but not active on Facebook. They're not actively being, and so if they're not active on Facebook, then Facebook's getting less data and information. But then the other side of it, the equation is Facebook is not just on Facebook with so many of their data pixels on so much part of the web, you can still be tracking and building out a profile of what these fans are doing. But then we also don't know what is Facebook going to track from a behavioral point of view in the messaging space. Are they going to be looking at and seeing what we're sharing backwards and forwards, or are they really going to go to a true encrypted, not tracking, messaging type platform, which obviously is going to affect their advertising business. So they've got a few decisions to make. But the fact that, Mark Zuckerberg said in his latest one, he's sort of moving away from that town hall, share all your info, to a living room style, the messaging that you have privately, definitely does change the overall product, both from a customer point of view, but also that data capture behavioral point of view.
It's going to be, I'm very interested as well to see how it plays out. And I think the press you read now makes me a little bit worried for Facebook, just because of the momentum now that's from a brand perspective. I think that there's been enough bad news now that I think they're going to they're going to be forced to try and change the way that things are being done. And it'll be interesting to see how that manifests itself going forward.
Definitely, definitely. Well, Vincent Akandia, thank you very much for coming on the podcast. I'm sure we'll catch up at a conference sometime in the near future, and hopefully one day I'll be up to Calgary, because it's not a part of the world that I've been to yet. So maybe one day.
Yeah, no, that would be great. Thank you very much for inviting me on, and I really enjoy your podcast. So thanks so much, Sean.
New workshops on audience, content, distribution, valuation, and pitch following Sports Geek's Digital to Dollars process. Go to digitaltodollars.com.
Thanks again to Vincent Akandia. Please contact him like myself. His Twitter handle is his name, Vincent Akandia, IRCANDIA. Or go to LinkedIn and connect with him and tell him that you listened to the episode. sportsgeekhq.com/231. You can always get to the show notes and all the links of an episode by going to the show number. As DJ Joel mentioned there, Digital to Dollars is a process that we apply for teams and rights holders to help them understand how they can better sell digital. A lot of the conversation we were just having then with Vincent was around knowing your audience and really diving in on the data. We don't go to the depths of what Vincent does, but we do then recommend parties and products and tools and people that can help you dive in further. But the process from our point of view is knowing your audience. So that's the first module, to dive in and understand the different audiences that you're talking to, that kind of thing. And then also then it gets into knowing your content, looking at reviewing what you're doing from a content point of view, knowing distribution, a review and a deep dive on what the platforms are doing, where the engagement is, how you can frame that story to your sponsors, because it's a really big part of knowing your value and what your rate card will be, and how you explain that to your sponsors, and how you can justify it, so you can put it together to know your pitch. So as I've said, if you're interested in that piece, if you want to start closing the loop between, say, your digital data and commercial teams, if you find that little bit fractured, Digital to Dollars is a good job of identifying some of those issues, but also closing them up and making that process a little bit more streamlined. Additionally, those first three parts, know your audience, know your content, know your distribution, they work for any business. So we actually work on a few different ideas around working with the corporate hospitality and corporate teams to do some education pieces and some workshops with some of your corporate hospitality clients and your sponsors to help them understand what they're doing in the social and digital space. So you can go to digitaltodollars.com to learn more about the Digital to Dollars process, or as always, you can send me an email, Sean at sportsgeekhq.com. And if you are just a lurker and you just want to keep up to date with the latest in sports and digital and technology and marketing, we've now got two newsletters. One is not enough. So we've got Sports Geek News, which has now been going for near on 6 or 7 years, I think. Actually, haven't checked, but that is a weekly newsletter which contains all the things that I read during the week. The ones that get the most clicks and the most love on my socials end up in Sports Geek News. If you're a subscriber, thank you very much. If you're not a subscriber, please go to sportsgeekhq.com/SGN and sign up and join some of your colleagues in reading those articles. My goal is to make sure that you get one or two articles that you may have missed and you'll click on, and that's where the value comes. And then we've been putting more and more esports articles in that newsletter as we've been doing more and more in the esports space. So what we've done now is followed the same template, created SG Esports News that will be esports focused. So we won't have as many esports articles in Sports Geek News from now, but you can sign up for that. It's going to come out in a different day. SGEsports.com is where you can sign up for that. And again, it will just keep you up to date with the latest trends, what's happening, what brands are doing in the space, so you can at least have a moderate understanding when your boss says, so what are we doing in esports? You can at least point to a few articles that I have been reading. So that is sgesports.com to sign up there. As always, get in touch, especially if you want to try a Pick My Brain session. You can simply go to sportsgeekhq.com/pickmybrain. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Follow our League of Legends esports team at gravitas.gg. For more resources, go to sportsgeekhq.com. Looking for new campaign ideas to drive new and fresh data and leads? Contact Sean to find out how Sports Geek can help you drive fans into your stadium. It's all about the cheeks in the seats.